And welcome back into More Outdoors, fourth and final hour coming up. Each month we have a segment called Hunt, Fish, Talk, and that's what we do. Well, we mostly talk, but we do some fishing and hunting, but not while we're talking. I'm talking about Keith Lusher, the host of the North Shore Fishing Report, and Captain Wendy Billiott, president of Louisiana Outdoor Writers Association, and also known as the Bayou Woman. Good morning, lady and gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning, Don. Sounds like you're playing Duck Hunter Whack-A-Mole this morning, huh?
I wish I was. Boy, I tell you, man, it's been tough for the duck hunters, huh? What is going on? Wendy, down by you in Dulage, are they doing any duck hunting, good duck hunting down there? Is that a duck call?
Good morning. I told you I'd
I think
be here
you
with
got
bells
Christmas.
On.
Yeah, you got your Christmas on your mind. I know what's on your mind. You're playing Jingle Bells.
That's right. Yes, I actually got a report from the blind this morning. I have two sons out in Dog Lake in Southern Terrebonne Parish, and they said there are hundreds of mergansas flying and not settling down. So they have, in the boat, as of 15 minutes ago, they had two, what we call dogri, and one merganser. So, not too good.
No, that's pickings are pretty slim, but glad they got something. Yeah, it's puzzling. Just not real good, and reports coming from anywhere. I was hoping I could get Kirk Stansel back on because I think they're probably going to be the top area over there in southwest Louisiana, judging from the hunt I made over there and what he told me earlier today and what they've been seeing. But good luck to all the duck hunters, and the good thing about duck hunting is if it's bad, it can change in a hurry because they got wings and they cover a lot of territory in a short period of time. So we could be covered up with them in the next week or so, or the next couple of days, actually. Well, anyway, we got other things to talk about. I hope y'all got to hear our interview with Jonathan Bordelon, a really dedicated guy, very smart guy. We are really fortunate to have him working as our deer biologist with Wildlife and Fisheries.
Yeah, I got to hear, and I got to, he brought up a few good points that I would like to talk about a little bit later as far as, things that
We'll get to that. First of all, North Shore Fishing Report. Which week are we going to be doing here? You're going to have a special Christmas edition next week?
Yeah, we're going to do it just a little bit before Christmas. That'll be the 22nd. So we'll get it out the way before Christmas and hopefully bring you some good reports. We've got some good reports coming in, even though the colder weather usually puts a damper on things. But we've been staying away from the hard freezes. So things have been pretty good. So a lot to report on next week.
Well, one thing I have not heard any reports from is duck hunting on Big Branch. Just nobody's saying they're doing anything there.
Yeah, Don, that area is tough because it's such a it's a public area, and those hunters don't tend to do much reporting for the most part. So even if you do have a good hunt out there, you're probably going to be tight-lipped.
Yeah, I guess there's some logic in that because, it's public. You can't keep people out. And if you tell them how great you're doing, that's going to attract people to your area. It's kind of like that with fishing, but not so much because, I've always told people, I've been doing this a long time, and people, I don't want to give away my good fishing spot. You're not giving away spots. You're giving away scenarios is what I like to say. You know yourself, you go to one spot and you can load the boat, and then you go back the next day and there ain't a fish there. It all depends on catching the tide right.
Right.
Whether it's falling or rising, the water clarity, the wind direction, there's so many variables, and that's what I like to try to explain to people is listen for what they're telling you they're doing when they're reacting to a certain scenario, and that's how you become a good fisherman.
Absolutely. If it's a drain, water coming out from a duck pond, and they're catching fish there, it's not just that drain that's good. It's the same drains along that canal that replicate that same drain. So just kind of listen to the conditions and what the water's doing, water clarity, and kind of mimic that. And that's just half the puzzle you're putting together right there.
I got a perfect story to tell you about that. One time we were fishing, and he will remain nameless, but we had the owner of a fairly large business in New Orleans that accompanied us on a fishing trip. And it was in the dead of winter, tides as low as they could ever be. And Keith, I know you're familiar with the bypass canal.
Mm-hmm.
the one that runs over there by the Intercoastal Waterway. That thing,
sure.
When it gets like that, it's kind of like by Ulutri. It stacks up with redfish. I mean, they're on mm-hmm. top of one another, and the banks are exposed, and there's very little water, and they're in there. Well, we went in there and limited out easily and then caught and released till we got tired of it and left. And I heard him tell his son on the way back, he says, "Don't worry, I got that spot on my GPS now." Like, that spot was always going to be full of redfish every time he and his son went back. And I didn't tell him
automatic, anything. Like clockwork.
But, right, that's a perfect example. I mean, the scenario was right for that time of the year and that situation to do what we did. But you could go back when it fills up and the water warms up and the tide gets up and then there won't be a fish in there.
Absolutely, and I'm sure you could speak to it with doing your shows in the Fish and Game show. You know, you go out, catch a lot, and then somebody goes, "Well, it's the same spot. There's nothing there the next day. That's just fishing." You know.
Yeah. Well, Christmas time. Let's talk a little bit about last minute or ideal Christmas gifts. I want you each to tell me what was the best Christmas gift you ever received, and I'll tell you mine. It's back in the days when Gore-Tex first came out. Up until that time, we were just wearing wool stuff or Army field jackets with liners in it. But my wife bought me one of the very first Gore-Tex jackets. In fact, I still have it and still use it. And that was like, you know, the Bic lighter to the caveman. You know, I couldn't believe it. You know, you didn't get wet, you didn't sweat on the inside, and it kept you perfectly warm. And that was probably the best Christmas gift I ever got. How about you, Wendy?
You know, I didn't think about this ahead of time. And what comes to mind, because you say jacket, is one of my sons bought me something very similar several years back. He bought me a water repellent lined hunting jacket that was the newest camo, whatever that was, wetlands grass or something.
Shadow grass, maybe?
Shadow grass, the one that you wear duck hunting. And I was like, I know what this is all about. You guys are trying to get me out into the duck blind more often for some reason. But, yeah, that was a really, really nice gift and very, very thoughtful. And I still have it, and I still use it.
Keith?
That's a good one. I have a gift that was given to me. I don't even remember how I got it, but it's a fishing pole. And it's an old Daiwa pole, and I still have this pole, and it's just made it through everything, and I really don't. I just use it for everything. It's one of those things where the new spinning reels come and they go, and I put it on this pole, and this pole is just a real trooper.
maybe it's not a magic pole
at all. It just stays alive somehow, and I think I've had.
And who gave that to you? Who gave that to you?
I do not. It might have been Santa, really.
I thought maybe they traded some magic beans for it and gave it to you. It sounds like a magical rod.
This thing is a real trooper. It's a soldier. It's still with me, but Santa might have came down the chimney with it. Who knows? I was young when I got this, and I still have it. I still have a new spinning reel on it. I matched it with a Daiwa, and I tell you what, I really love that thing.
Well, you might eventually have to bronze it and hang it on the wall because my rods never last that long. I always have a ceramic fall out of an eye. I have a bent eye. Somebody stepped on it. The tip is broken. I mean, I've probably got a dozen rods, and there's something wrong with every one of them. It's ridiculous.
I mean, that's why I bring
it up.
You
know, there's something about
it just makes it through.
There's something about a favorite rod. You know, it just feels good. You just like mm-hmm. it. You know, there's nothing special about it. Just, I don't know, it just matches up with you better, you know?
Comfortable.
Yeah. I had one, I can't even remember the make of it, but I don't think they make them anymore. What was the name of that one? It was real popular back in the day. And I still have it. It's been broke the tip, replaced the tip. It's one of those really good rods. Well, I'm going to tell you about a Santa Claus visit that I'm planning on making it this afternoon. If you want me to put a word in for you, I will. He and Mrs. Claus are going to be right near where I'm close to, the Bayou Lacombe Visitor Center, from 2 to 4. They've got a Cajun cottage set up, and they're going to take pictures of people with Santa, and you can, you know, tell him what you want, and as long as it's not a Red Rod or BB gun to shoot your eye out with or anything like that. And they're going to have free refreshments. It's going to be a nice little event. And I tell you, these National Wildlife Refuges, they put on a lot of programs, and they're all absolutely free of charge. You know, we've got some really good ones in southeast Louisiana.
Don, if you go over and talk to Santa, will you talk to him for me?
Sure.
Tell him that I've been really, really good this year, and it's only about $250? I want an automatic boat loading and launching system. I just saw it this week, and that's the coolest thing ever. So all you wives out there who are looking for something for your husbands, that would be a really, really good gift if he doesn't have one. Simple to install. It's a simple mechanism, and I just can't believe I never heard of this before. As much as I have launched boats by myself, you know, and leaned over the bow upside down to hook, you know, and entertained everybody at the launch, you know, this would have been really, really nice to have.
Well, okay, all except about you've been good all year part. You know, I might have to. Exaggerate a little. I'll exaggerate a little bit on that. We'll see what we can do to get it for you. I'll tell you another great gift is a membership to CETO. How good is that, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's something that people may not think to buy for themselves, but you know, when you got someone that's out there and weather's bad, and you're thinking about what where they are and how they're doing, knowing that they've got that phone call or radio transmission away and somebody will be there. Yeah, that's great. Great gift.
Yep. The AAA of the water.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, Keith, what's your on your list of Santa?
Oh, Don, I'll tell you what. I'm busy thinking about my little girls, you know, getting them all the right things. You know what I really want? I really want my turkey to come out really good. This year, I really put a lot of effort into it. I smoke my own turkey, and I go through everything. I brine it, I inject it, and I just put a lot of time into it. So that's really what's on my mind. I want a really good turkey, not too much to ask for. But as far as physical things, you know, I just want a happy and healthy family. And so far, that's what I've got, and just look forward to next year.
Well, let me give you a tip on that perfect turkey. Do you use a meat thermometer?
Yes.
Yeah, that helps. It's very easy to overcook a turkey, and that causes a dryness thing. But when you cook it to the right temperature, you know, you got a whole lot better chance of it coming out perfect. And the brining is good, too. I love to brine turkeys.
The brining keeps the moisture in. And you know what? I brined it in just straight crawfish boil, and you would think that flavor would seep in, but the salt in it just really preserves that moisture, and you don't get any of that crawfish boil taste. So that's my routine, and I'm going to stick with it. Seems to work pretty good.
How many hours do you smoke it?
I like to smoke it for probably about 8 hours, but I cook it on a very, very low temperature as I can to get it to that max temp. So it's just a slow process, but I tell you what, it's juicy. Hardly any of the juice runs out, and it's not long enough to lose the moisture.
That's good.
You know, another great gift is really a precious gift is your time. You know, just give them a
absolutely.
Card and say, fishing trip, I'm going to take you hunting. You know, there's no better gift than that, giving you time.
Absolutely. And maybe a gift certificate to a charter captain. I tell you what, that's a great gift for those looking for a gift. Just out of, you know, not only catching fish, but gaining knowledge with these guys out here. They really know their stuff.
Wendy, do you do wetland tour gift certificates?
I do, and I have done some, and I've also done some for fundraisers. Mm-hmm. People call me, you know, to donate to the silent auction or whatever. I've done a few of those. And for the most part, people do redeem them. Sometimes they don't. But, yeah, people who might not otherwise call me up and take a tour might, you know, bid on one at a silent auction. So, yeah, I do.
Well, tell them how to get you.
They can get me at bayouwoman.com. Everything is on there. And I've also given away nights at Camp DuLarge for people, you know, up to four people for fundraisers and things. You know, it promotes the business, and it gets people down here that, like I said, might might not ordinarily come. They might not ordinarily be that adventurous and, you know, not go down the bayou. And the interesting thing is their eyes are always opened, and after they've come here, and of course everybody says that in the height of the moment, but typically, you know, they want to come back. So, yeah, it's a good thing.
Very good. Well, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get more into this chronic wasting disease discussion. You know, and I'm asking on my outdoor opinion poll, do people think it's something very serious, somewhat serious, or is no big deal at all? I've heard that response, too. We'll be right back. You're listening to More Outdoors. I'm Don Dubuque, along with Keith Lusher, Wendy Billiott. It's called Hunt Fish Talk on a Saturday morning. And on Hunt Fish Talk, we discuss the hot topics of the day. We're talking about CWD, chronic wasting disease, a neurological disease caused by prions. It is spread from white-tailed deer to white-tailed deer. It also is present in, it could be in any cervid, which is basically hoofed animals. It's very prevalent. We just talked to Jonathan Bordelon, who returned from kind of a symposium dealing with it with representatives, his counterparts from many other states. And we talked about attitudes, regulations, and what the future is. He told us that there are 25 states now, the latest Mississippi. There's four positives been there, which is quite close to home. The restrictions are in place. Now, restrictions in Louisiana are a little bit different than some of the other states. And I was in Alabama recently. And traveling on the interstate, they have bought billboards that kind of jump out at you and basically say, keep CWD out of our state. It's great places to put this message, and it seems like that the public is aware of it. One of the things that has been very disconcerting to Alabama officials is some of the attitudes of the hunters. They recently had a joint operation between Alabama and Tennessee, and it took place where Alabama and Tennessee border is on the north side of the state. They resulted in six citations for hunters who brought back field-dressed deer into Alabama from other states. Mm-hmm. Alabama is still keeping the regulations that we initially did here in Louisiana, which was no bones. Basically, unless it was a skull that was completely devoid of all meat and brain matter, deboned meat only. We had that here in Louisiana. They've changed that to quarters, which certainly makes it a whole lot easier to bring back a quarter than sitting there and taking every piece of meat off of the bone before you make your trip back into the state. But what's even more disturbing was, and this is a quote from the Alabama Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. It says, "We've got guys bringing deer back to Alabama that originated many states away. Many, if not all, of the states they pass through have similar regulations. For a limited amount of time, we conducted this operation. It is a concerning number of violations. It speaks to the volume of the problem. We had several folks we questioned who were as aware and as fluent in the law as we were. They just thought it didn't matter. It's troubling that not everybody takes this as serious issue that it is." And I was recently in South Dakota talking with a lot of the local hunters there. Deer hunting is huge up there in South Dakota. And they basically said, that is no big deal. You know, it's been here for a long time, and the deer are surviving, and it's eventually going to phase itself out. Although talking to Jonathan Bordelon, he disagrees, saying that, you know, in Wyoming and Wisconsin, it's been there for 40 years, and it takes that long to show the really dramatic effects, the impact. He said 40 to 50% of the deer herd was infected. That is half of the deer in that state, and eventually it will cause cutbacks in the population, tighter regulations, maybe a reduction in the seasons. And he seemed to think that a huge impact in people giving up deer hunting would be because they wouldn't want to eat the meat, although there's never been a case of CWD being transferred from an animal to a human. That's not to say it's not going to happen or it can happen, but to date, it looks like consuming the meat is not one of the ways that the disease could be transported. So, Wendy, you've probably done, I'm sure, some research into this. You've been hearing about it. It's all over everywhere. They're trying to get the word out to people. And the question I'm asking the audience to weigh in on is on my website. How serious do you take it? Do you think it's something that we really need to put in every amount of effort into research and increase the amount of testing and the hunter awareness and force compliance, either through people just wanting to do the right thing or doing like Alabama's doing and starting to write tickets? To my knowledge, we have not had anyone in Louisiana cited yet at this point, but that could be coming. Or do you think it's just something that, it could be a little bit of a problem? Or is it no big deal at all? Just go on and don't worry about it. Nature takes care of itself. What do you think?
The more research I do on CWD, the more interested I am, because every time I research it, I find something new, another facet, and it's something that, you know, we didn't think of. Jeff Bordelon didn't mention this morning. I know he only had a short segment, but I was a little concerned that he did not mention any regulations, and I'm really questioning at this point if LDWF is still just recommending, let's don't put out any salt licks, recommending let's don't put out any feed, just as a deterrent. He didn't mention that at all. But I do want to mention something I saw on LDWF's site, is that since that first deer on the Louisiana-Mississippi border in January tested positive, they have sampled 300 deer within a designated buffer zone, within 25 miles of that index case in Issaquena County. So that includes East Carroll, Madison, and Tensaw parishes. So in those 300 deer, CWD, of course, was not detected in any of those sampled deer. So that's significant. At the same time, he mentioned Mississippi. They've tested something like 2,900, I think. Real quick, though, does Alabama have any positive cases yet, Don?
No, they have not had a single case yet.
Okay, I think that's good. I think that's valuable information for what we're looking at here. You haven't said your poll results yet, but I did poll people on Facebook, and it was a 50-50 split. It was, you know, the 50-50, and the question was, if CWD is discovered in Louisiana, will you continue to hunt? And 50% of them said they would continue to hunt, and 50% said they wouldn't, because they only hunt for food, and they would not knowingly eat deer from a positive CWD test. Now, I have a good friend who spends a lot of time and energy and money hunting on a lease in Missouri, and there's four or five of them that go, and they go a couple times every year. In Missouri, on the first weekend of rifle season, they test every deer that's taken, and it's an astronomical number of deer. And they do have CWD in Missouri. And by the time the hunter can access those results, he would have already frozen that meat and probably eaten several meals off of it. Okay, that kind of concerns me. And they're not concerned about it. They still go. They harvest, you know, all the deer they can, they bring it all back, you know, all the meat back and everything, and they're not really concerned about it. So what's the point of testing if the people with the deer aren't going to find out for a couple of months? That concerns me, and I know I'm taking a lot of time, and I got a lot to say on this, Don, stuff that we haven't said before, so I can go on now, or you can go to break, and we can come back, and I'll pick up with the consuming part.
Well, let's do that. Let's take the break and come back and talk about the consumptive part of it, because, there's never been a case so far that someone has, you know, that has jumped from a cervid to a human. But I guess the fear of it is going to be in the minds of people. And that's kind of surprising that 50% people said they would no longer hunt deer if it's found in Louisiana. And that's that fine line that the state has to walk. You deter people from that. And you know what happens when the licenses and the equipment and the special taxes and, the permits and all of those fees that go into deer management go away, then you were in a worse situation. We're talking CWD. Don Dubuque, Keith Lusher, Wendy Billiott, back right after this timeout. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about chronic wasting disease, one of the real hot topics in 2018. The spread of CWD, chronic wasting disease, has now shown up in Mississippi with 4 positives, 21 states total, also some Canadian provinces. Will it make it to Louisiana eventually? Will it not? We're surrounded, Texas to the west, Arkansas to the north, and now Mississippi to the east. We're discussing it with Wendy Billiott, Keith Lusher. Wendy, pick up where you left off. You were talking about consumption of venison and other served meats when there's known presence of CWD.
Right. So let's have a quick history lesson. According to the Center for Food Safety's timeline for mad cow disease, the first diagnosis of this new disease in cattle, which is similar to, and I didn't know this, to something called scrapie in sheep, so sheep have it, occurred in 1986. So in the early 1990s, the British government said that the disease presented no threat to humans, that cattle were a dead-end host. Okay, so 5 years later, 3 people died of something called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. That is the human variant of mad cow disease. So the next year, the British government announced that mad cow disease could indeed be transmitted to humans, and after that point, about 4.5 million cattle were destroyed. So it took 5 years and 3 people to die for them to say, and so here we are today saying that there has not been one instance of a human consuming, you know, venison infected with CWD that has contracted some form of this disease. And we just want to reiterate, this is not a bacteria, it's not a virus, it's tiny, it's very smaller than a bacteria, it's a protein called prions. And I talked to a doctor friend of mine who has about 500 acres in North Louisiana for deer hunting, and he's very, very concerned because he's familiar with the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and he said that because of the prions, they are nearly impossible to kill. And when a patient with this disease is treated, the standard sterilization processes do not work on the equipment to remove the prions. Yeah, so it's almost like it's here to stay. It's really nearly, I'm going to say, impossible to eradicate, which makes some people say, so no matter what we do, it's here, it's going to be here, it's going to spread. And I'm not trying to unnecessarily be Chicken Little and alarm people to stop deer hunting and don't eat your venison. I'm just saying that I think that we're fortunate in that on the eastern border of our state, the Mississippi River is not really that easy to cross, so hopefully the deer, that's going to be a natural barrier for us, because those deer that were taken on the border were on the eastern side of the Mississippi River. So no infected deer have swum across the river, and hopefully they won't. However, that doesn't protect us from deer coming from Arkansas, and it doesn't protect us from them coming from Texas. I really don't know how they travel in herds, but there's nothing to prevent that from happening. So I think we would be foolish if we don't, at this point now, do everything that we could possibly do, and maybe even take out some billboards and things like Alabama is doing to make people aware. I spoke to a gentleman this week who is a pharmacist, and actually he was trying to get his hunting license at Walmart so he could go deer hunting. He has no idea about chronic wasting disease, none. So there are still people who deer hunt who don't know anything about it. And I guess that's why we're doing our job.
And the transport, you know, is probably a more likely source of spread than a deer just naturally crossing from one state line to the other. When you've got people with contaminated deer carcasses driving them in from other states, the likelihood of the spread here or the occurrence of it is more likely from that method than the deer just crossing over, I would think.
Well, it is, because even if they bury that carcass, those prions get into that soil, and I can't remember how many years later this has been tested, and the prions were still present in that soil. And examples of the things that they're doing, the research and the studies that they're doing, this is not a new thing. I mean, as you mentioned, they've been researching this in many states across the nation for many, many, many years, and I think we really need to pay attention.
Well, you know, it's almost like a science fiction story, these prions. I mean, spread through. Yeah, they can be. If an animal defecates onto a food plot and a deer comes by and eats the grass out of that food plot, that's a spread. It can be spread through saliva. It can be spread through bodily fluids, through water, through feed. You know, and that's why a lot of these feedlots, where the animals are in close proximity in big numbers, is some of the ones that are at most risk. In fact, that's where most of the scientists believe it started, was in some of the pen-raised operations where they had a close proximity of a lot of animals, and eventually, you know, one would contract it and it would spread throughout all the others.
That's correct.
And also I want to bring up plants. There was a University of Texas study that says if the feces is on a plant, the plant brings it into its system and it lives inside the plant. So,
right.
You know, maybe that's one of these, that's the reason why everybody's so laissez-faire. Maybe it's like, this is going to happen whether we try to stop it or not. But I definitely think it's a good thing that we try to limit it. I think it definitely is. But I think the major, we could talk about this as far as sportsmen in Louisiana, and we can argue, you know, whether it should be tougher restrictions or, you know, tougher bans or a reduction of cage-kept deer and so on. But I think if they can prove that this can jump across the line to humans, now you've got a whole new discussion. That ups the ante and brings this discussion to a new level. Like Wendy said, the chronic waste disease is similar to the mad cow disease. It is prions. You know, both are caused by the prions in the infected animals. But so far, we don't have any cases of CWD crossing that line. That's a good thing. But here's something I dug up, and this is from the University of Edinburgh. It states the researchers have found that CWD prions from cervids in North America can convert the human brain prion protein in a test tube. So that means they directly mixed them, and it affected it. Now, that's not to say that our bodies, you know, aren't meant to fight off this before it even affects our brain. But that's just a scary thing to know that they've actually mixed these two together and affect the human brain protein. So,
well, we started out by saying it is a neurological disease. So, and I'm not trying to unduly frighten anyone, but in the deer, it would be neurological. It would be brain matter.
Mm-hmm.
It would be spinal cord. And it would be lymph nodes. And so if you clean your deer properly and you avoid tissue, you know, from any of those areas, and certainly don't consume anything that would have touched any of those areas, they're saying theoretically that you should be fine, because it's not in the muscles. It's not in the actual meat that we consume. But one thing that I read that concerned me is that sometimes it can be a 30 to 40 year incubation period on a prion. Mm-hmm. That just blows my mind. So, Don, you're talking about
scary.
How many years out was
people,
it? Sorry?
I mean, millions of people have eaten this within, what, 50 years since they've discovered it, and nothing has shown up in humans. So I think that's a real good sign.
Right.
So, and another thing, 900 degrees it takes for several hours to destroy it. That's pretty
interesting. I didn't even find that information that they could destroy it.
Yeah, so I found 900 degrees.
Hmm.
Well, you know, the other thing is the awareness. I think we've probably slowed the spread because Alabama has been working on this for the last 16 years. Wyoming's been dealing with it in Wisconsin for 40 years. So the more research and the more information that gets out, the more people become aware and comply with the regulations, I think we're actually doing some good. It's still managing to show up in places that it hasn't before, but I don't think it's at the rate that it would be had we done nothing. You know, one other thing that I think that hasn't been brought up but certainly comes into play is mistrust of government. You know, we've seen so many instances where, you know, government just deceives and defrauds the public that, you know, when there's money at stake, research grants and taxpayer money, you know, sometimes they'll exaggerate the impact of a certain disease, if it's got to do with disease or other problems, to get the money so that they will have funding to do more studies and more education and more equipment to buy and more testing to do. And people really have a mistrust, and they'll say, I've heard some people say, oh, this CW, there's nothing to it. They're just trying to get more funding for their agency by spreading the alarm that it's so dangerous. So that comes into play where people, you know, it's the crying wolf theory. You know, they've seen it before. Government's done that to get money out of the taxpayers, and they fear that that's what's at play here and that really the disease isn't that bad.
Yeah.
But
no,
I got to tell you, monitoring diseases and looking at them, this one is certainly different. It's very different than, you know, the one, the blue tongue, you know, any of the other ones that have gotten to animals, hoof and mouth and all that kind of stuff. This thing is really, really frightening, the way it those prions can survive and spread.
And you said mistrust of government. I came across a story. Jim Kaczmarek is the public health veterinarian for the state of Wisconsin, and he says they are required to hunters that kill anything that tests CWD positive, they receive a phone call from the state officials, and they ask if they plan on eating the meat, and also to share the names of whoever they've given meat to. And he says that's when a lot of hunters just simply hang up, because that just, you know, that's, you bring up government, and when the government starts asking for names of people, it's like, this is
all hang up.
They hang up.
Well, did you hear the story that Jonathan told about the hunters from Arkansas and Texas?
They made
hunts there. They brought the deboned meat back into the state. And then by the time the testing took place and they discovered that they had CWD contaminated deer, they contacted those hunters and told them. And they asked them if they would donate it back to them so that they could do further testing. And I guess that would kind of kill your appetite if you get a phone call and they said, oh, that deer you just brought in, it tested positive for CWD. It certainly
okay, well, here's
lose
the thing.
My appetite.
He did not say, I kept waiting for him to say, had they consumed any of it yet? He didn't say.
Well, maybe he didn't know.
They certainly should have asked, like Wisconsin.
Well, then. Yeah.
Did you eat any of it, and who did you give it to, and who all
gave me the names of everybody?
Right, I agree. I totally agree.
All right, time for a break, and we'll come back and wrap it up here on Fish Talk. We're talking CWD, chronic wasting disease. And we're wrapping up our discussion on the CWD, chronic wasting disease, but it certainly won't be the last time. This is not going away. It's going to be on the forefront of the deer hunting industry for quite a while. Wendy and Keith, you know, something that really hasn't been brought up too much is the enforcement aspect of the regulations on the carcasses being brought into the states. I'm going to give you an example. You know, my bad boy story this morning involved an 18-year-old kid and a 27-year-old guy who shot a six-point deer and a rabbit at night. Their possible fines they're facing is $4,074 and up to 120 days in jail. Now, in the scheme of things, is 1 6-point deer going to affect the population and impact the deer hunting industry? Or would some one person bringing in a contaminated deer that leads to the spread of it in Louisiana be more serious? Yet we have not had one citation written. And I understand that the first year of it was to be an educational thing. They wanted people to become aware with it and educate them to the point where they would agree to be compliant with the regulations. But I think both of you agree with me about the seriousness of this, and I think certainly there should be some enforcement measures taken. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking as far as Alabama, they've set up checkpoints evidently on the Tennessee border.
Not just that. They've done some other ones.
I don't know how they go about doing that, but, you know, maybe that's a good idea rather than game wardens hiding out in the woods at night trying to catch people bull-eyeing and stuff.
Well, there you go. Maybe our man – certainly you want to stop that. You want to have a deterrent for that activity too. But in the scheme of things, which one is more devastating to deer hunting?
Well, absolutely not catching someone bringing in potentially contaminated deer carcass. To me, well, I mean, that's almost a no-brainer, isn't it, Keith?
Yeah, maybe that's what it's going to take to get more recognition for this in Louisiana. I mean, if we don't have any cases and we're not dealing with it, maybe that's why a lot of people, you know, don't really care about it. Maybe when they hear, maybe you should make an effort to put the first case on Bad Boys of the outdoors, Don. I don't know. Maybe hitting them in the pocketbook, maybe that'll get their attention. But look, I mean, it's like anything around here. If it doesn't affect us, we're not caring much. I mean, this kind of reminds me of the private waters issues when it was in West Louisiana near that Texas line. You know, nobody down here, you know, it was just a story. And then now we go to turn into our favorite duck pond and we see private property and it's wow. It's like, okay, now it's a big deal. So maybe it's just how to run its course and things have got to just hit home, so to say. And
at least some citations. You would think some warning tickets would have been written, you know, because I'm sure that
it could have stopped people. It's so tough because like Jonathan Bordelon said, you know, these are ice chests in the back of a pickup truck. It's not even visible on, you know, a seeing level. So,
well, I mean, a lot of times it is.
I assume you can't
just
stop
a trailer
them.
With. Well, now here's the thing: a wildlife agent, if you are wearing hunting clothes and you've got four wheelers and ice chests, that's probable cause for them to stop you. They've got a lot more latitude than a regular law enforcement officer.
Good.
And if they start setting up roadblocks, and now if you are in plain clothes and you're driving a compact car and you got deer meat in the ice chest in the back of the trunk, they can't stop everyone. But the way to put a deterrent on this is if you're going to charge two guys $4,000 for shining one deer at night, you make the penalty so severe that you have to think twice about whether the likelihood of you getting caught is not going to be that great. But if you do, and look, there's a lot of people with loose tongues, and they talk, and they call the Operation Game Thief Hotline. Almost, I would say 75% of the cases that I cover on that Bad Boys, that's where they start, is with somebody giving a tip. Absolutely. And if someone knows of someone that came in with the deer and the carcass wasn't prepared properly and they get reported and the fine is off the charts, because really the fine should be commensurate with what the damage it does. And if you're looking at a $4,000 fine for one 6-point deer killed at night, how many 6-point deer are killed in the scheme of things over a year's time? It really, really, really doesn't amount to that much of a impact, negative impact to the population. Whereas this thing with CWD could be very, very impactful.
At the risk of saying something very Pollyanna, maybe we don't have CWD in Louisiana because all of our hunters who go out of state are observing the import ban and doing things properly and according to law.
I wouldn't look for the casino to give you good odds on that one at all.
That's a positive, optimist view.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, they haven't established, they haven't made it public what the penalty is. And that, you know, if they start telling people we're going to do road checks, you know, that's part of it. That's a deterrent. The fact
I think
that
they should.
You know we're going to be out there. Sure. And then establish some very, very high, strict penalties if you are caught. And then even stricter if the deer that you bring in happens to test positive. You know, and then, you know, you like for people to do it, because it's the right ethical thing to do. But, you know, as well as I do, you got to have the laws to back it up to put teeth into it.
Well, and here we haven't even gotten to the economic impact of folks stopping hunting. And if they are not going to hunt for food for the table, then all our deer hunting is just going to be for trophy deer. And as part of the management process, Dave Moreland even said that, well, it's a good idea to go ahead and take those younger deer, especially if you're just hunting for food for the table and you're not hunting for a trophy. Take the deer younger because it takes 4 or 5 years for it to impact the deer. Isn't that right, Don? Didn't Dave say that?
Yep, that's correct. He did. He said it's probably going to alter, you know, private ownership management operations, the policies and the practices of taking younger deer. The theory has always been, let them walk so they will grow, you know, but that may not hold true anymore.
Right, and then there's the economic impact of licensing, as you said, and all that that supports, and then leases. My goodness,
well,
how much money changes hands on deer? Deer leases.
What will end deer hunting as we know it if the first case where it jumps from animal to human is positively identified, it's over. It's pretty much over. You'd have some people still wanting to hunt for the trophies and for killing it, but I think without the food aspect of it, I don't think it could survive.
What were your poll results, Don?
It's just gone up. I haven't really checked them yet. I usually give it a couple of weeks before we update. It'll be up for a whole month. But I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see, and I think it's probably going to mirror pretty close to what you said. I think there's a lot of people that just say, it's here, we'll deal with it, no big deal, you know. And then you got people who really don't completely understand the seriousness of it and the nature of this disease, you know. And I think if they did, then maybe they would change their attitude, and that's part of the reason we're doing what we're doing. And I think we continue to talk about it, too.
I think so. And the update from the duck blind is 5 ducks.
Jimmy Corley checked in with us in Hopedale. He got 15 in his blind. He's top blind so far. Maybe
Great.
They flew late this morning. I'm hoping they did.
Maybe so.
Well, speaking of late, we got to get out of here. Time is up.
Merry Christmas
to both of you. Keith.
Merry Christmas.
Keith, North Shore Fishing Report next Saturday, 8 to 9.
That's it. We're going to be talking a great, great report with 31 stripers caught out of Chifunka. So we're going to get cover that next week, too.
I want to hear about that.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas to the both of you. Have a happy holiday. And we'll see you next year. And we'll be starting off in January with another Hunt Fish Talk. Hope you'll join us, too, right here on WWL FM 105.3 HD2 and live streaming at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com.